It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. After conservative activist Charlie Kirk was shot and killed last week, social media lit up with strong reactions.
And not all of them were sympathetic to his death. Some people posted criticism of Kirk's controversial views on race, gender, sexuality, and religion, many of which he shared during a campus visit to UW-Madison last year.
At least two people in Wisconsin have lost their jobs as a direct result of social media posts about Kirk after the shooting.
Vice President J.D. Vance hosted an episode of Kirk's podcast yesterday and delivered this message.
So when you see someone celebrating Charlie's murder, call them out. In hell, call their employer.
The social media discourse following Kirk's assassination has sparked a national debate about the First Amendment and freedom of speech, something Kirk himself said he was a strong advocate for.
Francisca Coleman is an assistant professor of constitutional law at the UW Law School, where she researches First Amendment law and social regulation of speech, often referred to as cancel culture. Francisca, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you.
You describe cancel culture as social regulation of speech, where the consequences for expression are not from the government, but from all the people around us, from society. Is that what's happening in cases like this where workers are fired for social media posts about Charlie Kirk?
Yes, you definitely, in most cases, have people who see the post on social media who bring it to the attention of their employers. Normally it's more than one person, but sometimes it could, you know, depending on the person, if they are very influential or, you know, given, you know, that the vice president has kind of said, call these people out, then that kind of adds a little bit of gravitas to any other kind of accusations that come. So it doesn't actually have to be a group of people once you have kind of the highest authority in the state kind of saying, we want to find out who these people are. We want you to let their employers know. Because, I mean, the subtext of that, right, is that employers, when they're made aware, should take steps. So sometimes it requires multiple people multiple times. But I think in this context, it could just be a single person who, you know, takes the VP up on his recommendation and reaches out to an employer.
Because crowdsourced, you know, online naming and shaming of people, that's not new. But I think what I'm hearing, what's different now about the people making the calls to fire people due to their posts, it's coming from the highest levels of government. Is that different?
So I don't know that it's kind of different. I think that, well, maybe it is in a way. I think one of the things that I kind of say in my writing is that what happens to a person who's called out on social media always depends on their proximity to power. Mm. And so you can kind of get that proximity to power in multiple ways. And so one way to get that proximity to power, right, is to actually have, you know, the kind of administration saying, you know, please, you know, let employers know if you see this kind of language. But there are other ways to kind of have proximity to power, like celebrities, you know, who are kind of saying, oh my gosh, we need to watch out for these people. We need to, you know, so it's not, so I think the way in which the accusers of the employees who are posting negative things about Charlie Kirk, the way in which, you know, proximity is defined in their case is unique, but the fact that it's always a matter of proximity to power has not changed.
When we've talked to you in the past, you have said that cancel culture is mediated by institutions. And in this case, that's employers deciding to fire employees based on their speech. What is an organization's responsibility in regulating the speech of its employees?
I think their primary responsibility is to make sure, if they're a private employer, to make sure that their employees have notice. Some companies have social media policies that are very vague, so employees aren't really on notice. Others have no social media policy at all. And then I think the other responsibility, aside from notice, is proportionality. I think not all of the comments about Charlie Kirk are kind of equally worthy of condemnation, are equally insensitive, are rude. Some of them kind of have, you know, more implicit lack of sympathy, and others are quite overt. Like, I have zero sympathy, clap, 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 right? And so I think kind of trying to not have a one size fits all, and also thinking about the employee's kind of course of conduct. I mean, if this is the first time they've ever had any kind of issues, I think that employee should be treated differently than an employee who, you know, every other day is embroiling the company in some kind of social media fiasco. And so I think considering the work history of the employee in terms of their, how they've been a responsible and good employee, proportionality, and also making sure that there was adequate notice.
Posting on social media, it leaves a record. It is proof in a way. How consequential is that permanence?
I think it's becoming increasingly consequential because I've heard, I know one of, some advice that we give to our students that are on the market, right, is to check their social media because sometimes when people are making hiring decisions, right, they are kind of looking up, the potential employees on social media. But I also think, amazingly, you find posts from like years ago that come up. I mean, now it's posts, but before, it was kind of like newspaper clippings, pictures in yearbooks. But so permanence, is not a definitely a new thing. But I think just this is kind of an issue because people change, right, over time, and standards change, right? And so things that were relatively uncontroversial, maybe 10 years ago, then you unearth them, 10 years later, and they seem extremely problematic and troubling. And so I think the permanence by itself is not a problem, but like how we take into account the changing of times between when something may have been posted and how it's received now. And so I don't know that we can do anything about the permanence. I mean, we don't quite have a robust right to be forgotten here in the US, but I think people who are consumers of this media, just taking into consideration, yes, this stuff is permanent, but the person may have changed in the interim.
We're talking with UW Madison Law Professor Francisca Coleman as we look at free speech and the consequences in social media reaction following Charlie Kirk's killing. Are there protections for workers in this moment? Are there any legal protections for expression in these posts?
So for private parties, they are not quite bound by the First Amendment, and many employees are at-will employees. So any kind of protections would be contractual. And so if they have, some kind of contractual right to due process, if some employers actually have committed in their kind of employment manuals or employee manuals to protecting free speech. And so I think it's going to be a matter of contract, but in the absence of any kind of contractual commitment by the employer or kind of any kind of bargain for due process protections by the worker, then I think the worker doesn't really have a lot of recourse. For a private employer, just because if they're an at-will employee, if they're not an at-will employee, of course, it's a completely different story.
And in that's private sector, Pentagon leaders announced a zero tolerance policy for military personnel making light of Kirk's death. Is there a gray area when the government is your employer?
So there is kind of a gray area. I mean, there's a standard, but the standard is a standard, not a rule. And so the standard has a couple of elements. So first, if it's on a matter of public concern, which the kind of shooting of Charlie Kirk would be, and then the second is, are you speaking within, is speaking out, is this, are you kind of giving this speech, this expression within the course of your duties as an employee? So as a professor, normally everything I say is kind of part of my duties. And so some people who have administrative positions like chancellors, maybe even a dean of students, there may be an argument that some of your kind of public-facing words are the words of your employer. But if that's not the case, then you have this kind of Pickering balance, which basically kind of evaluates, like, is your speech kind of disruptive to your employer? Like, so disruptive, like the value to society and the value to you of kind of being able to make that speech, is it outweighed, right, by the cost to your employer in terms of efficiency, workplace harmony, that kind of thing. And so that balancing test, is very, it can go either way. It's really going to depend on a judge. And so that's one aspect. And then I think in the military context, you have another issue, which is maybe if you kind of kind of satisfy all of these elements. Maybe they could also say, national security concerns. And so that may be kind of a part of the balance that would not be present for a regular employee. And so I think the kind of national security concern and the interests of the military and kind of having a unified force and we're not having too many schisms in the ranks, then that might be an added concern that the military has that maybe other government employees wouldn't have.
So, as we walk this line, where is the line between a healthy disagreement about someone's actions or someone's beliefs versus the extremes of celebrating or glorifying someone's death?
So I think we're kind of in a state where a lot of the speech is contested. I mean, I think that there was a time when we could agree, like, oh, glorifying this is bad, or this is kind of a glorification. But now I think we are in a time where people feel that strong words are needed in order to bring attention to certain circumstances. And so you just think about the strong words that you hear in relation to the Israel-Palestine issue. And I think people feel, particularly people who are concerned about gun violence in America, they feel that strong words are needed, right? This is a moment in which we can use these strong words to bring attention to this problem. There is a sense in which, the kind of civility and what we the norm of civility has eroded. And I just think people now have different metrics by which they feel like there are certain circumstances in which the norm of civility can be set aside, but we don't agree on when those circumstances are. And I think it's a problem of, when I feel like there is a kind of pressing issue that requires dramatic speech, then that's when civility can be set aside. People outside of my discourse community disagree. So that's not an answer, but I think people are going to come to that question in different ways depending on where they're standing. But I do think we have had an erosion, of the norm of civility.
Francisca Coleman, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Francisca Coleman is an assistant professor of constitutional law at the UW Law School. She was with us to share her expertise on the First Amendment and cancel culture in the wake of conservative activist Charlie Kirk being shot and killed last week on a Utah college campus.